Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, I expressed to them I was mad. I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? You know what day it is. Happy Friday. Or as I like to say, happy Fri-yay. That's right. The end of the week has come, and if you work a 9 to 5, I mean, what, you're like 4 hours away, East Coast time, Eastern Standard Time, 4 hours away from starting your weekend, which should be a good one. I mean, a lot happening, especially tomorrow. I mean, you got the Michigan State football spring game taking place, the green and white spring game taking place. Also, tomorrow marks the home opener for your Lansing Lugnuts. How about that? I know it isn't great outside right now. Actually, as I left the gym last night and I walked out, my goodness, I saw snow flurries coming down. I'm saying, come on, really? That's how you're going to do us like that, mid-Michigan? Come on, yeah. Can we just be done with the snow? Can we be done with the snow? It's April, for goodness sake. All I'm asking is that we get good weather for tomorrow, because the mid-Michigan area is going to be banging. A lot of folks out there will be heading downtown to Cooley Law School Stadium. A lot of folks will be heading to the green and white game, just hoping for good weather, right? But you know what? We've got a great show. Just briefly, to tell you what we got coming up. On today's current sports, we will have a triple header of guests for you all. Chris Bartley, dear friend of mine. We went to college together, but Chris is a Detroit-based litigation lawyer now at Foley and Lardner. Chris is an attorney who's going to join me on today's current sports to break down the Donnie Corley, Josh King, and Demetric Vance plea deal of seduction. And it's a really confusing one in many regards to a lot of folks, including myself, because, you know, this is a case and an investigation that's been going on for a long time, you know, over a year now. And I don't think many people out there expected a plea deal of seduction to come through. So Chris is going to break down what this means for these three young men, for these three former MSU football players. And he'll dive into what exactly this seduction plea deal entails. It actually comes from a law from the 1930s. I kid you not. So Chris will join me in just a moment around the 1:15 mark. At 1:30, we will be joined by Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. As I just mentioned, Jesse is the play-by-play voice of the Lansing Lugnuts, and the Lansing Lugnuts will open up the season at home. The home opener will take place tomorrow evening. And then on the back end of the show, we will have Sergeant Jason Fuller joining us on the show. He is a member of the U.S. Army and a representative for the Battlefield Brawl charity flag football tournament, which is right around the corner, happening later on this month. But I do want to pass along this story. We're going to get to our headliners in just a moment, but I don't know if you guys saw this story. I'm going to save my rant for Reflection Friday, but Luana K. Simon, former Michigan State University president, Luana K. Simon, she isn't completely gone here. In fact, she really hasn't gone anywhere, because news has broken that Luana K. Simon will actually have an office inside a historic house on campus that has recently undergone a almost million-dollar renovation. Simon, who resigned as president earlier this year amid the whole Larry Nassar scandal, Simon will be among at least four current and former university officials with offices in the newly renovated Wills House, which is in campus's West Circle neighborhood bordering Michigan Avenue. It's near Landon. Planning for the project began in 2015, and among those slated to join Simon and Willis House is her husband, Roy Simon, who serves as a senior advisor to the executive VP for administrative services. I really can't believe this story, and I really don't understand how this university begins to heal amidst the Larry Nassar scandal. If you have the woman who was in charge, the person who was in charge during this horrific sexual assault scandal, changing the lives of countless young women and girls, I don't know how you move on or begin the healing process if the person who was in charge is still here living and getting paid by the very university. I don't get it. Look, I'm getting all worked up right now. I'm going to save it for the tail end of the show. I'm curious to get your comments. Multiple ways in which you can weigh in. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News. Live stream is up and running there. Comment below the video. I'll do my best to get your comments throughout these next 60 minutes. And you can also even tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. We start with the Michigan State football spring game happening tomorrow. Michigan State fans will get a glimpse of Spartan football this weekend. MSU will play its annual green and white spring game at 5 p.m. tomorrow at Spartan Stadium. It will mark the Spartans' first game action since that 42-17 win against Washington State in the Holiday Bowl back in San Diego in late December. Coach Mark D'Antonio said, like last year's game, it will be formatted offense versus defense, which is different from the 2016 spring game, which players were assigned to a team draft style. The forecast in East Lansing for Saturday calls for a blistering hot 35 degrees, a low of 18. No chance of precipitation, though. But bundle up. If you are going to Spartan Stadium tomorrow, bring a blanket, layer up, don't get sick. The Spartans will hold their annual free youth clinic at the John and Becky Duffy practice fields located behind the Duffy Doherty building tomorrow from 12:30 p.m. to 2. All right, inclement weather has postponed Michigan State baseball games game today with Nebraska, and the Spartans and Cornhuskers will now play a doubleheader on Saturday and a single game on Sunday at McLane Baseball Stadium at Cobbs Field. Saturday's doubleheader between the Spartans and Huskers will start at 12:05 p.m. with a single game scheduled for Sunday at 11:05 a.m. to accommodate Nebraska's travel schedule. Now, additionally, Saturday is the fourth annual Strikeout MD Day at the ballpark with accessible carnival games, face painting, poster making, along with other activities outside the stadium to support the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Very cool stuff there. So a very busy day in the area tomorrow. You got Michigan State baseball taking place. You got the Lansing Lugnuts home opener. You got a spring game. Very busy day in this area tomorrow. All right, Michigan's NCAA men's hockey tournament run came to an end last night in the Frozen Four after Notre Dame scored the game-winning goal with 5.2 seconds remaining for a 4-3 victory. Michigan freshman forward Michael Paschov. I don't know if I'm saying that. We do have Jason Ruff behind the glass, our hockey expert. How do you say that? How do you say that one more time?
There's two Paschov brothers, so Paschov. You know, it's tough. It's tough.
Paschov. That's a tough name to say, hockey names. What we're having to Bill and Mary and Smith and, you know, the easy names, right? But Michael Paschov tied the game at 3 with 5:22 remaining before Irish senior Jake Evans, that's an easy name, right? Scored his second of the game in the final seconds of the Frozen Four matchup at Xcel Energy Center in Minnesota. Notre Dame advances now to face Minnesota Duluth, a 2-1 winner of Ohio State in the national championship. It is the Irish's second title game appearance, with its first coming in 08 in a 4-1 loss to Boston College. Number 10 Michigan playing in its 25th Frozen Four, finishes the year 22-15-3. The Lansing Lugnuts will host their first home opener of the season tomorrow night, and only for home opener of the season tomorrow night. The team will face off against the Great Lakes Loons at Cooley Law School Stadium at 7:05 p.m. The big event will start with an opening day block party. Fans will have the chance to meet the team starting at 3 p.m., followed by a team-wide autograph session. Gates for the game open at 5 p.m. The first 1,000 fans will get a free Lugnuts scarf. A fireworks show will also follow the game. Again, keep it locked right here. We will be talking with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, who is the play-by-play voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. There were fist bumps and high fives, a hoot and a holler. The Detroit Tigers did it again. They came back in the ninth inning in cold weather and flurries with the wind whipping. And this time they were rewarded with a win. For the second time in six games this season, the Tigers erased a multi-run deficit in their final at-bats against the Pirates on opening day. They scored four times, and yesterday afternoon against the Chicago White Sox, they scored three times, then twice in the 10th inning for good measure. They wrecked the Southsiders home opener, winning 9-7. The Detroit Red Wings got a much-needed loss to keep them steady in the standings as the season winds down, fighting for high lottery draft picks, right, or high draft picks, period. After banking an impromptu 7 points in the previous four games, the Wings fell 4-3 Thursday at Little Caesars Arena to the Montreal Canadiens, a team below Detroit in the standings. The Wings are better off finishing low in the standings to improve draft lottery odds and overall draft positioning, as they are in rebuilding mode for sure. Detroit is now 30-39-12 on the season and have 72 points. That's sixth worst in the league. The Detroit Pistons will host the lottery-bound Dallas Mavericks tonight, scourging for reasons to really stay focused. The Pistons have failed to make the playoffs in three of the four seasons with Stan Van Gundy as head coach and the president of basketball operations. Power forward Blake Griffin has missed the last three games with a bone bruise in his right ankle. Van Gundy says Griffin will play if he's healthy, even though the games are really meaningless at this point. The Mavs will be without their future Hall of Famer Dirk Nowitzki, who underwent a surgical procedure on his left ankle on Thursday morning. He will miss the remaining games before the Mavs' 105-100 loss to the Orlando Magic on Wednesday. He had appeared in all but one of the team's previous 78 games. Real quick, a peek at the leaderboard at the Masters. What I'm seeing here is Bernd Weisberger is leading the field at 4 under, and tied for second are a slew of players: Adam Hadwin, Charlie Hoffman, Patrick Reed, Henrik Stenson, Ricky Fowler, and Matt Kuchar. Zach Johnson, Mark Leishman, Rory McIlroy trailing close behind those individuals at 2 under, and Tiger Woods is 4 strokes back at +1. He will tee off in a matter of minutes now at 1:27 p.m. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's keep it moving.
Normally, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I would dive right in and do everything in my power to help one of my guys, but not in this situation. You know, he came into the Barclays Center, attacked our fighters, and attacked my staff with a bunch of guys. And no, you don't get my help on this one.
And I want to just make sure that we're all understanding you correctly, because, again, many people who don't know him personally as you do might look at this and think this wasn't really that out of character. You're telling us this act was very out of character for the Conor McGregor you know personally.
It's out of character for Conor McGregor and any of my fighters. Listen, crazy things happen in sports. You know, nobody knows better than you guys. You guys have been doing it forever. Crazy things happen. You're dealing with human beings, with, you know, personal lives and all these other things. But, yeah, in the history of the UFC, this is definitely the worst thing ever that's happened. No, this is not Conor McGregor. This is not the Conor McGregor that I know.
Can you see him fighting for UFC again?
I don't know. I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I don't know.
Was there any question in your mind before yesterday that he would fight in UFC again?
Oh, absolutely. He was absolutely fighting in the UFC. We were actually working on a new deal and a new plan for him all this week. All this week we were. And then he shows up and this happens.
When it comes to being plug one, it's just me, myself, and I.
Oh, Conor. Conor, what were you thinking, dude? Conor McGregor, I don't know if you guys saw this. I like to start with the most interesting thing that I saw in the last 24 hours, and it was clearly this. UFC president Dana White, a part of ESPN's new morning show entitled Wake Up, Jalen Rose, Michelle Beadle, as well as Mike Greenberg, Dana White, president of the UFC, addressing Conor McGregor, who was caught on camera throwing a dolly through the window of a bus. It looked like really a stage scene from WWE when they take the camera backstage somewhere, right? Conor McGregor lost it. Threw a hand dolly through the window of a bus that was carrying UFC fighters at a UFC 223 media event at the Barclays Center in New York yesterday. White, very angry, says that he doesn't know whether or not Conor McGregor will ever fight in UFC again. I think that's a load of crap. I think right now the UFC is getting free publicity right now, and people are so intrigued when it comes to Conor McGregor. They are really intrigued now, right? You better believe that if he does fight again, people are going to pay to watch this man. So he'll be back in the octagon. It's just a matter of when, right? But he was arrested. He was arrested. And he showed up to this media event unexpectedly. He was retaliating for an incident earlier in the week between himself and another fighter. And also McGregor's teammate was involved in this whole thing as well. So White told ESPN that he had a text session with McGregor on Thursday after the incident. He said that McGregor was, quote, apologetic about the people he was trying to hurt, but he felt what wasn't trying to hurt. He was apologetic about the people he wasn't trying to hurt, but he felt that the fighter that he was really perturbed about, this had to be done. So White said he was dumbfounded by McGregor's actions. I guess that's what happens. You kind of go crazy, I guess. When you make $100 million off a fight, like the Floyd Mayweather fight, I guess you kind of go crazy. I don't know.
I just don't understand, of all the people to get in an outside of their sport fight,
yeah,
like this guy who is a professional fighter, has a venue to do this kind of thing, where if he wants to hurt somebody, just, hey, challenge him to a fight, you know? You don't have to do this outside of the ring.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. So
with a hand dolly through the window?
That took some skill, I must say.
That's a lot of strength, man.
Watching him, you know, on that video, throw that dolly, gosh, the dude, he made that dolly look like a pillow. I mean,
yeah, I would
goodness.
Not want to be one of the officers that had to arrest him.
I tell you that, yeah.
I'm scared of that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, McGregor's crazy. But, you know, he willfully said, all right, you got me.
And yeah, he turned himself in.
Turned himself in. There's a mugshot online. TMZ Sports is all over this, but yeah.
Of course.
So that was the most interesting story that I saw in the last 24 hours, with the exception probably of this Luana K. Simon story. I'm going to contain my rage right now. I'll get to that to close out the show for Reflection Friday. But right now, I want to shift gears to a story that also has dominated headlines here on WKAR's Current Sports. By now, many of you know that former MSU football players Donnie Corley Jr. Demetric Vance and Josh King have reached a plea agreement in a sexual assault case. All three have pleaded guilty to seduction charges in exchange for the dismissal of criminal sexual conduct charges. The seduction charge is not a sexual assault charge. A sentencing hearing is now scheduled for June 6th, the morning of June 6th. The men could face up to 5 years in prison. The guilty pleas were accepted Wednesday morning by Judge Rosemarie Aquilina in Ingham County Circuit Court. There's a few things I want to comb through here. There's a lot of logistics I want to comb through here. The trio, of course, was accused of raping a woman in a bathroom during a party in January of last year at an apartment on the East Lansing campus. They were kicked off the team during a police investigation into the incident and no longer are enrolled in the university. Right now, I want to welcome to the show Chris Burtley, who is an attorney based in Detroit, Michigan. He is a litigation lawyer at Foley and Lardner LLP, which is an international law firm among the largest and oldest law firms founded in the U.S. Chris is a graduate of the University of Michigan Law School, and his past legal experience includes representing clients in criminal, immigration, and high-stakes civil litigation. He did earn his bachelor's at Michigan State, and he hails from Flint, Michigan, a dear friend of mine. Chris Burtley, how you doing?
How you doing, Al? Great to be on the show.
Always good chatting with you, my friend. And I just want to dive right into this and kind of go through first. And I want to ask the obvious question here. The use of, quote, seducing and debauching an unmarried female as a plea. You know, this comes from the Michigan Penal Code Act 328 of 1931, stating, quote, punishment: any man who shall seduce and debauch an unmarried woman shall be guilty of a felony punishable by imprisonment in the state prison not more than 5 years or by fine of not more than $2,500, but no prosecution shall be commenced under this section after 1 year from the time of committing the offense. How common is this, and why do you think prosecutors arrived here, Chris?
Right. I mean, it's a great question, Al, and there's a lot of moving parts here. So I think it would be most helpful to kind of give an overview of the process for the listeners and then kind of see how the plea deal got here. And especially, as you referenced, such an old statute. We call them statutes, which are basically laws that have been passed and then what make up the criminal penal code. So such an old statute that even as the prosecutor herself said that the law is archaic and it comes from a bygone era. And it certainly sounds like that the way that it's written. So it is a tool, and she described it as a tool, and it can be used if necessary. But I'd like to give an overview of some of the process of how we got here.
Yeah, please.
If I can, Al.
Yeah.
So I think most citizens and probably most of your listeners' experience with police are tend to happen, you know, maybe at a traffic stop or something when they get pulled over, and the police may see an act that's in the current of going on, right? But a lot of times police are involved in investigating accusations of things that happened in the past. And that makes their role largely investigative. And they have to interview witnesses, they have to gather evidence, and they're putting together the pieces of what happened and trying to see if the activity that they've been tipped off to or that they've been referred to violates a criminal statute. And after they gather all of that evidence, they take a look at it, and they decide whether a warrant is going to be issued. And they take a look at certain penal codes, and they decide whether the activity that the person that they're investigating violated it. And they'll turn that over to the prosecutor's office, and the prosecutor's office will decide whether they're going to press charges against the individual. Now, you know, it's a separate investigation and determination that the prosecutor makes on whether charges should be filed. I'm sure your listeners may remember in the Adrian Payne and Keith Appling case, there were charges that the police suggested that the prosecutor charge, and they declined to charge. So you're going to have two separate determinations, whether the police think that it's appropriate that a charge be pressed against the individual and then what the prosecutors are going to file. So here, once evidence was gathered by the police and turned over to the Ingham County prosecutor, they decided that it was appropriate against King, the first-degree sexual misconduct charge, and then Corley, of course, the third degree, and Vance, the third degree as well. And then, of course, King had a third-degree sexual misconduct and additional minor charge. So, you know, when you have those type of charges, it's the prosecutor has to take a look at what is the evidence support, because they have the responsibility to prove that the crime was committed beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's a very high standard. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking at the evidence. They're seeing what crimes do the evidence support. And they're going to look at what we say, do they prove the elements of each charge? And certain charges will have more difficult or more elements to prove. So when you see a charge go from a high-level charge as the first-degree criminal sexual misconduct charge all the way down to a seduction charge, that's going to be a charge as lesser elements and ultimately a lesser criminal time period that they could be in jail. So there's a lot to kind of go over there, but there's a lot of moving parts, and an analysis that's done at every stage, from the police stage, the prosecuting stage, up to the plea stage, which we're at now.
And speaking of the plea stage, Chris, why did a plea deal happen? Because, you know, and we were chatting via text yesterday. It now looks, you know, like the prosecution maybe didn't have a strong case against King, Corley, and Vance.
Well, there's a lot of factors that go into it. You know, first and foremost, the prosecutors have to make a determination of what the evidence support. You know, they have a lot of factors that they're looking at. They're looking at, of course, the survivor of the alleged assault. They're looking at their responsibility to the public, to the people, and to the citizens. So, you know, they have a duty not to overcharge. Of course, they want to charge the appropriate act that they think the evidence supports and that they think that they can prove to a jury that guilt. And at the same time, they also want to, keep the survivor in mind as well. And one of the key points I think that is important here is in this plea deal, the prosecutor said that they consulted and discussed the plea deal with the individual who was involved with who survived the accident as well. So, you know, it's an important element because they have to prove their case, and proving the case in a case like this is difficult because there's just not a lot of evidence. You know, you're going to need if there was maybe a rape kit that was a test that was done, if there were other witnesses, and one of the most difficult things is having the individuals testify. Of course, a survivor of the acts, that can be a very traumatic experience, a difficult experience that many people, are going to find challenging or don't want to do. And then also the young men, you know, they may not want to testify, maybe difficult for them to testify as well. And if you are looking at the evidence and you're deciding, you know, your case and the credibility of witnesses and predicting how it will go over with the jury, there's going to be concerns from the prosecutor's side of the case that they have and you know, the ability to reach a verdict. And there's also going to be concerns on the defense side. You know, if you're facing up to a life in prison like King was, you know, and you have the ability to plead to a lesser charge, it seems like this plea deal is certainly a middle ground. And getting the consent and the consulting the survivor in this circumstance really gives a lot of space to the prosecution to be able to come to a plea deal like this.
Certainly. Again, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with attorney for Foley and Lardner, Detroit-based litigation lawyer Chris Burtley, about the King, Corley, and Vance plea deal. And Chris, you know, the seduction charge is a felony with a maximum sentence of up to 5 years in prison. It involves seducing an unmarried woman for sex acts. Under the agreement, King also pleaded guilty to a charge of surveilling an unclothed person. He originally faced the most serious charges, as you just mentioned, one count of first degree criminal sexual conduct, one count of third degree criminal sexual conduct, and capturing an image of an unclothed person. He faced up to life in prison, as you just said, if convicted. You talked about the evidence and processing the evidence. The video, what role do you think the video had in coming to this plea agreement?
You know, it's difficult to say, of course, without seeing it.
Right.
But and the key to a lot of these charges are going to be consent, and also are going to be whether there was coercion or forced acts that were done. So, you know, if the video displayed some of those elements, I think that would have been very strong for the prosecution's case. But if the video may have not been a full video and maybe it doesn't show some of those elements, then maybe it's not necessarily, proving innocence, but it's just going to prove that it's going to be an evidence that's going to not go towards the elements and may not necessarily, help the case as much as the prosecution would like. And on the flip side, help the defendants as much as they like. So it's very hard to say without seeing the video, and of course the video won't be released as well.
I've got two more questions before we get you out of here, Chris. One, how common is the, you know, this Penal Code Act, you know, 328 of 1931? How common have you seen seducing and debauching an unmarried female in your line of work?
Well, it's very dependent on the prosecutor, and Prosecutor Seaman's statement really touched on this a lot. I mean, she released a statement on the incident, and it really talked about her outlook and her progressive outlook on sentencing, and she described it as a tool, and she says it's one that is, I'm paraphrasing now, but isn't commonly used, but it's consistently used by prosecutors, and they have a lot of leeway and a lot of deference in deciding how they prosecute cases and how they're going to use the tools at their disposal. So, you know, certain prosecutors wouldn't use this and wouldn't have done this route, and other prosecutors would have, and it's really dependent upon the certain prosecutors. So, you know, it's something that maybe a different prosecutor in her shoes wouldn't have wanted to plead down to that, but maybe others would. And I think what's really key about the plea deal and the seduction charge is that it's a charge that doesn't require registering for the offender, the sexual offender registry in Michigan. Mm-hmm. That allows the three young men in this case to be eligible for the Holmes Youthful Trainee Act. And that's very key here. You know, the main thing that the prosecution certainly wanted and the defense wanted was to find a middle ground. And this was an offense that that acknowledges the sexual misconduct in the act. It's not just a simple assault and battery. It's not a misdemeanor. It's still a felony. And at the same time, it allowed the young individuals to still have an element of their crime that allows them to be rehabilitated, which, because of their age, allowed them to be eligible for the Youthful Trainee Act, which allows them to go to school, gives them an ability to basically expunge their record, which is if they comply with all the elements of their parole that the judge will assign to them to basically get their record sealed and move on with their lives. And having the consent of the survivor, like I said, is very key here, because it seems like a middle ground that all the parties were able to come to and allow them to reenter society and continue with school and be reformed at the key end of it, not just punished.
Yeah, and that's where I was going next. That is certainly an important component of this whole thing, as Vance Corleone King will be granted, you know, sentencing under that. As you just mentioned, the Holmes Youthful Trainee Act allows young adults to keep criminal convictions off their public record. All right, Chris, final question. A hearing for the three is set for June 6th in front of Judge Rosemarie Aquilina. What can we expect at that hearing?
Well, so the key thing, I think, at the hearing is that this is an agreement. You can think of a plea deal as an agreement between the prosecution and the defendants. But, you know, the prosecution's job is just to prove guilt, and it's not to sentence. The judge's job is to sentence. So they can come to this agreement, but at the end of the day, the judge is the one that has to sign off on the sentencing. And so, you know, it seems like from all indications that she's going to sign off and agree to the sentencing. But if she doesn't impose some jail time, then the defendants can withdraw their plea. So, you know, ultimately there's going to be continued discussions, and you know, I expect that she will agree with the prosecution. But, you know, if you follow other news, I mean, there are cases where the judge doesn't agree with what the prosecution says. So, you know, it's important to just follow along with the case and see the judge's interpretation and also her guidelines on the individual's probation. One thing I do want to say, Al, which I think is a kind of a key element here, is there's a certain anonymity a little bit with the Holmes Youthful Trainee Act for most individuals. For yourself or myself, if we were 19 or 20 years old and and we had a charge and we complied with our probation, then when we applied to a job at 28, 29, 30, 35 years old, we wouldn't have to mark the box that we've had a past conviction. And if someone did a background check or asked for records from the state police, they wouldn't see the conviction. But these individuals, they've already been in the news. And so, you know, although they will not, if they comply with their probation, they will have the record sealed, it's still Googleable, which is something that when this act was written wasn't a thing. So, you know, going forward in the criminal justice system, this act, although it's going to certainly allow them to seal their records if they comply with probation, it's still going to have an impact on them. And it's still going to, you know, take away some of the anonymity, I guess, that some of the other people who have been involved in the program have.
That is a very good point. It's 2018, and if, you know, you publish a story, you know, like, you know, King Corley and Vance, they've all three been in the news now for over a year based on this case. And again, you know, if an employer wants to pull up their name, that story is going to come up regardless if the record is expunged. So I think that's a very important point, Chris, because they are essentially public figures. Fantastic stuff. Did I miss anything, Chris, before we let you go?
I don't think you did. I think you covered it well. You sound like a lawyer now.
Yeah, right. Look, you're the one with the degree, man. That's why I just adhere to you, brother. And we really appreciate the time today here on Current Sports. Hopefully, it's not your last. Again, Chris Burtley, Detroit-based litigation lawyer at Foley and Lardner. Chris, thank you so much for your time. I'll be in touch, all right?
Okay, thanks a lot, Al.
All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be chatting with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. Jesse will talk about the home opener for the Luggies downtown Lansing at Cooley Law School Stadium tomorrow evening. That and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished up a chat with Detroit-based litigation lawyer at Foley and Lardner, Chris Burtley, who broke down the Corley King and Vance plea agreement as those three former Michigan State football players have now accepted a plea deal in relation to a case that dates back to now more than a year ago in January of 2017, in which they were accused of raping a woman in a bathroom during a party at an apartment on the East Lansing campus. They are faced with now the charge of, or the plea agreement, when it comes to this plea agreement, the use of seducing and debauching an unmarried female as a plea, the Michigan Penal Code Act 328, that dates all the way back to 1931. So for me, first off, it was really surprising when reading this law, this Penal Code Act, because first off, it's so old. I don't know how it can still be a law today. And when you read the logistics of it, you know, men attempting to seduce a woman, an unmarried woman. It's very old in when it comes to the wordage. You can just tell by just reading it. And my goodness, I mean, if that law was really enacted today in this state or any state for that matter, men try to seduce women on the daily. So it's crazy. It just really kind of took me by surprise. It really did. But nonetheless, I mean, you heard the logistics of how this plea agreement is going to go down. Again, a sentencing hearing will be set for the beginning of June, June 6th, in front of Judge Rosemarie Aquilina. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. We don't have Jesse Goldberg-Strassler ready just yet. I shot him an email. He's a busy man right now because, I tell you what, Mother Nature just can be so annoying sometimes. I've been getting press releases from Jesse pretty much all day, to be honest with you. And he's noting now, I just got this email actually about 20 minutes ago, but opening day game time has changed for the Lansing Lugnuts due to the weather. So the Lansing Lugnuts opening day block party tomorrow will now start at 3 p.m. as scheduled, but the first pitch between the Lugnuts and the Great Lakes Loons has been moved up to 5:35 p.m. So I want to make note of that. Again, be prepared. It's going to be 35 degrees outside, and actually the Lugnuts – are releasing special 35-cent general admission temperature tickets. How about that? So 35 degrees, tickets will just be 35 cents for the first 1,000 fans. I think that's pretty cool. So you can go to the game. You can be one of those first 1,000 fans who can go to the game for less than a dollar, less than 50 cents, for goodness sake, right? Very cool stuff. Fans who have already purchased their opening day tickets may exchange those tickets, used or unused, at the box office for any future Lugnuts game this year. So again, gates will open at 5 p.m. First pitch for the Lugnuts and the Great Lakes Loons has been scheduled for 5:35 p.m. All right, while we're trying to get Jesse to call in, I do want to discuss the interview that we just had with Chris Burtley, because there's a lot of logistical law areas that really had to be combed through here. And I think in a way, Ian, when you look at this lesser charge of seducing an unmarried woman, which is archaic, and Ingham County Prosecutor Carol Seaman did admit that in her statement, just as Chris noted. When you look at it, I just think that the prosecution didn't have a strong case. They couldn't have.
It doesn't sound like it. With the fact that they had a video to go off of, and they still couldn't get the convictions for the original charges.
But you know, when you talk about the video, I bring up this point as well. I think, and again, I'm just speculating here, I think that the video may have worked in the favor of King Corleone Vance here, because it may have shown that what happened in that bathroom, in that apartment, may have been consensual. I don't know.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that, honestly.
Exactly. It may have been consensual. Who knows? Again, I'm just trying to process what we do know based on this plea agreement. And when putting in perspective how at first, when this first happened, my goodness, I mean, this was a national story. King Corleone Vance, many Michigan State fans out there were already, you know, sticking the stake in these three players and chastising them, saying that they raped this young woman, you know, being very reactionary. And, I said, look, pump the brakes. Anytime we're talking about a case like this, or any case for that matter, let the facts play out, and then let's process those facts and then come to a conclusion, a logical conclusion. So when you're dealing with the legal process, again, everybody's innocent until proven guilty. But in 2018, it seems to be the exact opposite, especially when concerning cases of this nature. But when looking at it now, I mean, seducing an unmarried woman is the agreement here, the plea agreement here. So I think that the prosecution did not have a strong case, and these three young men should certainly be counting their blessings right now, because if they comply with this plea agreement, again, it won't show up on their record. It'll be completely eradicated and wiped away, and they can move on and try to live a normal life, try to chase that NFL football dream. Now, as Chris noted, again, it is 2018, so nothing, if you're in the news as a public figure, being accused of alleged rape, all it takes is a simple, you know, if you're applying for that job, if they want to figure out something, all you got to do is just simply Google that person's name, and boom, it's going to come up.
Unless you want to be president.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's a whole other topic, right? But it'll pop up. It'll pop up, boom, just like that, right? So it's 2018. That can't fully be wiped away from their respective records. However, this does give them kind of a clean slate if they do comply to this plea agreement. So, but it's interesting, though. And again, you're talking about a law or an act that dates back to the 30s. And I'm also wondering, too, I got to pose this question as well. I'm wondering why this took so long. I mean, we're talking about over a year now. You know, January of last year, we're now talking about April of 2018 for this to come through.
That doesn't really surprise me with the way the legal system goes now, you know, how
it's like
slow
a turtle,
things.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, this man has, these kids have had birthdays since they have been arrested. So it's just a shame to see how slow the legal process moves sometimes.
And again, you have to respect it, because again, there's some details and there's an investigative process that has to play out. I'm just wondering why so long. I mean, January of last year, that's over a year now. So at the end of the day, though, I think that now these three players can move on. I think the Michigan State football program has now moved on. I mean, my goodness, you saw what Mark D'Antonio did last year, completely flipping the script. And I think that that situation was even amplified more, and all eyes were on Mark D'Antonio even more so due to the fact that they had just come off a 3-9 season. Well, he completely turns that around. It seems as though Michigan State football is back on track now, and things are that dark cloud that I used to talk about when it comes to Michigan State football is we're starting to see some kind of blue skies and sunshine now. And that may not be the case tomorrow, though, because of the weather that's predicted to be, to come here in East Lansing tomorrow for the green and white spring game. But I will say, you know, as far as, you know, shifting gears now and talking about the spring game, the spring game is one of those events in that I look at and say, this is just cool just to see college football back in some way, shape, or form. You know, when people start analyzing, oh, who's going to be in? Who's going to be starting? Who's going to be the breakout player of the spring game? It's a spring game. It's an exhibition. It's a controlled exhibition. The only guys you're going to really see going all out are those who are fighting for a starting position. You know, those who are maybe on the brink or trying to work their way into some kind of consistent playing time. This allows them to showcase that talent, to put their name on the minds of Coach D'Antonio and the coaching staff to possibly have a bigger role when the season does begin next year. But as far as, you know, I don't overanalyze the spring game. It's just a cool event for the fans, a cool event for Spartan fans to go out there, check out the team, see what new pieces are there with the team, and to kind of get in that college football mode before the summer months hit.
Yeah, I don't analyze it too much either. To be honest with you, I've never been to a spring game, so I'm really looking forward to it tomorrow.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, we were going to go as a family a couple years ago, but then something came up with my parents, and they couldn't make it down.
Okay, gotcha.
So I've had plans to.
As a student, you've never been to the spring game. You've been here 4 years.
I know. Wow. I know. I got some things to cross off my bucket list. As I said, I still have yet to play either of the Forest Acres courses as well, and I'm a pretty big golfer. Just in my in my own life, I don't follow golf too closely, but I love to get out there and hit the ball around. So I got some things to check off, but we'll get this green and white game taken care of tomorrow.
Yeah, well, you'll be covering it with me tomorrow. I don't know why I keep thinking today's Thursday, but yeah, tomorrow, Saturday, spring game. Michigan State, and just looking at the numbers here, Michigan State will return 19 of 22 starters this season, only 7 of whom will be seniors, and has 16 players back on offense, 20 on defense, who are in the final 2-deep roster. That group won the Holiday Bowl, of course, and finished 16th in the USA Today Coaches Poll and final college football playoff rankings, as well as 15th in the AP Top 25. I tell you, the job that Mark D'Antonio did last season, it was one of the most remarkable coaching performances in the nation, in the world of college football. Absolutely amazing. So, again, green and white, spring game scrimmage for Michigan State football will take place tomorrow at 5 p.m. If you don't feel like braving the weather, braving the cold, you can catch the game on cable television via the Big Ten Network. All right, let's hit our final break. I don't know if we're going to get Jesse. I think Jesse is a bit busy right now because of the times moving and shifting, so he's sending out a ton of press releases. We'll try to get him on next week, but we hope to have calling in on the show Sergeant Jason Fuller in just a moment, who is a member of the U.S. Army and a representative for the Battlefield Brawl flag football tournament. That and more. We'll be right back to put a bow on this Friday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, I just received an email from this individual. Actually, you guys know what I'm talking about, our dear friend Jesse Goldberg Strassler, play-by-play voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. He says, "Al, biggest apologies. My phone died, so I bought a new phone. I tried to switch everything over, and I'm learning now from your message that my phone is blocking all calls. I tried calling and I can't do that either. I'm really sorry, man. But you know what? Technology does work, even if it's last minute. And we do have Jesse on just for a brief period right now to talk about opening day, the home opener for the Lansing Lugnuts tomorrow at Cooley Law School Stadium. Jesse, I'm glad you figured it out, my man.
Al, I grabbed my assistant's phone. I said, hey, I need to make a call. Help me out here. Thank you for fitting me in.
No problem. Well, again, we only got 5 minutes, so I just want to get right to it. Just remind our listeners about tomorrow's home opener. I know the times have been moving and shifting because of the weather. Just kind of give us an update and just kind of comb through things for those who want to enjoy some Lugnuts baseball tomorrow.
I appreciate it. 3 o'clock tomorrow, opening day block party starts with meet the team, followed by team autograph session. 5 o'clock, the gates open. First 1,000 fans get a scarf from Auto Owners Insurance. Really cool Lugnut scarf to help us out with the cold weather. 5:35 p.m. first pitch.
5:35 p.m. first pitch. And it's going to be a busy day in the Lansing area, isn't it, Jesse? Because as I've been mentioning throughout the hour, I mean, you got the green and white game going on at Spartan Stadium. Also, Michigan State baseball will be in action. Very busy time, right?
Yes, it is. Look, it's a Saturday. Things are hopping. So in East Lansing and in Lansing, we're making sure that things are awesome. And at the Lugnuts game, we've got some post-game fireworks, too. So you can check out Michigan State and then roll right on over to us.
That's great stuff. All right, Jesse, I tell you what, we'll get you on next week so we can talk about what transpires this weekend and to talk about some future promotions for you guys throughout the year. How's that sound?
Al, I got sabotaged by my phone. I appreciate you understanding. That sounds great.
Of course. Hey, I know how it goes. It's live radio. It's life. Things happen, man. But I appreciate you finding a way like you always do. Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. Jesse, you take care. Have a great weekend, all right?
You're the man, Al. Thank you.
All right. Let's also get to Jason Fuller, who's waiting patiently. Sergeant Jason Fuller, member of the U.S. Army and representative for the Battlefield Brawl Charity Flag Football Tournament. Jason is here to continue to, it's like every Friday he's on, to continue to talk about this amazing event that raises money for charity. Jason, how you doing? I know you're short on time, just like us, right?
Yeah, doing great, brother. Doing great. Down here doing some work with my battalion right now, but the Battlefield Brawl 9 is the 22nd of April at Marshall Park, hosted by none other than Spartan and NFL great TJ Duckett and also Justin Kane, benefiting the Davies Project and New World Flood Organization this year. As of right now, we have 32 X-Factors that are playing, and Al, you are one of them, and so looking to go out and raise the money like we have the last 9 years, well, 8 years prior, and give out to these local charities that take care of children and also the mentorship from the New World Flood.
Again, Jason, how can our listeners get involved and even contribute to the cause?
They can go to the newworldflood.org website, and the information is all there about the Battlefield Brawl. We are still looking for a few more teams to sign up. As of right now, I think we have 8. And we're going to be having a great deal when we have it out there. There's going to be a couple food trucks out there. We're going to have 3 fields that I know of, and we're going to be playing from, I think it's 10 o'clock to about 6, as we normally do.
And how much is registration for teams, Jason?
A registration per team is $500. Mm-hmm. And each team is asked to have about 10 people on it. And then we will have the draft a couple days beforehand. We're going to have the draft. We're going to meet at Dan Henry. They have a patio they're allowing us to use for the draft, and we're going to do everything live.
Very cool stuff. So April 22nd, 10 a.m., looking forward to it, Jason. Let's hope that the weather is much better at the end of April, right?
Definitely want warmer weather than we have right now.
You can say that again. All right, Jason, get back to work, brother. Good talking to you.
All right, thanks a lot, brother. Be easy.
You got it. All right, well, we have just 3 minutes left here in the hour. We can just go right to Reflection Friday. Just play the music softly underneath because I do just briefly want to address this. I promise you I'm going to elaborate more on my thoughts when it comes to the Luana K. Simon story in which she will get an office inside of a newly renovated historic home on campus. I don't know how this university heals if you still have a person who was in prime leadership, who was in prime leadership when Dr. Larry Nassar was employed here at the university, abusing and assaulting women, young women and girls. It just makes no sense. I just don't get it. So we'll tackle that and so much more on Monday's current sports. I want to remind you all that we will have a post-scrimmage report from the Michigan State football green and white football game tomorrow night. So keep it locked to Facebook.com/WKAR News, as well as my Twitter handle at Al Martin WKAR, or you can even follow WKAR News at WKAR News on Twitter as well. I'll post those reports there. We'll also be interacting with the fans. I'm just going to try something new and different along with our post-scrimmage coverage for tomorrow's spring game. As far as favorite moment of the week, Ian, if I had to put you on the spot right now and talk about your favorite moment of the week, what would it be? Favorite story, favorite guest, whatever.
It would honestly be probably just because of comedic value, this Conor McGregor thing that's going on. Again, I just don't understand how a professional fighter who has an outlet for this sort of thing, especially against another fighter, you know, it's not even just like some random guy that he had beef with. I don't understand how you let yourself get to that point where you're just throwing a hand cart through the bus window or, you know.
A dolly, right?
Yeah, yeah. Just like, come on, man. You know better than this. You're one of the top fighters in the world. Clearly a very smart guy as far as your marketing schemes go. I mean, I think a lot of his stuff is for show anyway, so.
Maybe this is as well.
Yeah, maybe this is all just another big publicity stunt, but very unnecessary, in my opinion, if that is the case.
It's going to cost him a lot of money, I'm pretty sure. Maybe a few of the fighters or people who are injured and harmed by this incident are going to sue Conor McGregor, right? So it's going to be a long process. But I just want to give a big shout-out to all of the guests we've had throughout the week. Deshaun Tate of CBS Radio Atlanta, Drew Valentine, assistant men's basketball coach for Loyola Chicago. He joined me yesterday. And today, of course, we had Chris Burtley, attorney in Detroit, Jesse Goldberg-Strassler of the Lansing Lugnuts, as well as Jason Fuller, representative for the Battlefield Brawl. A great slate of guests. We'll see you same time, same place on Monday. Have a great weekend. And as always, be easy, people.